Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we explore the week's big political stories. I'm Mike Siluma, and thanks for joining us. This time on the Politics Weekly, we focus on a problem that is posing perhaps the single biggest threat to the country at the moment, the power crisis. We look at factors that have caused Eskom to become the monumental failure it is compared to what it was in the past. With our panel, we will be exploring what it might take to turn the situation around. Let's welcome our guests. This time, Professor Mark Swelling, chairperson of the Development Bank of Southern Africa, who also teaches at the Center for Sustainability Innovations at the University of Stellenbosch. And, of course, Professor Mazwe Majola, who's CEO of the Worldwide Institute of Leadership.
With immediate effect.
When people saw us,
and I quote, "In 2 years' time, Eskom's problems will be a thing of the past. People won't even remember load shedding." Unquote.
They put saliva on the paper.
I'm in charge. That's why these fools are running around here. I'm in charge.
And then they share that zone.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Point of order, ruling party by point of order.
Must step aside within 30 days.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
He has no brains whatsoever.
The ANC president was sabotaged again yesterday.
Well, sabotage, that can be.
This is not a shift.
Can you please come in?
Welcome to the both of you. Professor Swelling, let us start with you. What is the nature of the problem we have at Eskom? Do we have a management problem or a political problem?
We have both. So, yeah, I think we have, unfortunately, a perfect storm, a mix of dynamics which have come together in ways that have left us with a complex problem, which we cannot really predict how it will unfold. What we can be certain about is that we're going to be living with high levels of uncertainty for at least the next 2 years as load shedding persists. The causes of this have got a lot to do with, decisions, that were made in the past. We didn't start building new power stations in the late 1990s, despite the fact that government approved a white paper that said we must. We didn't sign off, Eskom didn't sign off on the power purchase agreements to bring in new renewables in 2015 and 2016 under the leadership of Brian Malefe and Machela Koko. And Gwede Mantashe did not procure new renewable energy in 2019, soon after he was appointed minister. So those were decision points that were missed. And the consequences are what we have today. In addition, on top of all of that, we had state capture. And the disastrous build of two of the biggest coal-fired power stations in the world, Mudupi and Kusile, which have still not complete and are underperforming and cost more than double what they should have.
But, you know, someone might say, look, we have had the same political party running the country since 1994, and surely in South Africa we should have enough engineering capacity, you know, the same kind of capacity that built Eskom in the first place. How come we have not been able to address the issue? Because it is not something that sort of happened upon us suddenly. It's a problem that has been building up.
Yeah, it has been building actually from the late 1990s, but it has its origin in the pre-94 de Villiers Commission of Inquiry that led to the proposal that Eskom had transformed into a company with the state as the primary shareholder, which in turn gave the state the right to intervene in ways that wasn't the case before with respect to board appointments and executive appointments. So that's really the origin of political interference. But yes, it's true. The governing party is the one that's been in power since 94 and has presided over these processes. But, you know, it's quite often there's a difference between being held accountable and blame. The ANC doesn't sit there and look at options and make decisions. The decisions have been heavily influenced by advisors. So there's a long litany of advisors. There were advisors, academic advisors, in the 1990s who said, no, Eskom mustn't build, wait for the private sector to do that. But the prices were too low, so the private sector didn't invest. Prices of energy. And a low price of energy is what the economy then depended on, especially for export. And then you have the likes of McKinsey coming in and making absolutely disastrous recommendations for savings, which it was going to get a slice of. And we have PwC also playing a major role in causing many of the problems we face. We have in Konki, the accounting firm, we had Deloitte. All of these are very, very, very substantial and highly influential consulting companies that provided a lot of the advice, which resulted in the disastrous decisions that got made. And they should actually also be held accountable for the mess we are in.
Professor Majel, I'd like for you to come in here. You know, you've just heard what Professor Swelling has been saying. He highlights the role of consultants, you know, who have been giving advice, etc. But I have to ask you, what is the nature of accountability that should be laid at the door of government? Because you know, we say we have government which makes the decisions. You know, granted, they will get advice, but at what point does government actually have to fall on its sword on matters such as this?
Yes. Just before I answer that question, Mike, I think we must commend Eskom for really the sterling job that is done in terms of distributing electricity to the wide population of South Africa. Because, you know, comparing pre-94, when the majority of South Africans didn't have electricity, and obviously everything was well there because it was just concentrated on a small portion of the population. Now, post-1994, Eskom has really distributed electricity, has penetrated far-flung communities, whether it's informal settlements, whether villages, obvious others. We know that there's a lot of illegal connection, especially informal settlements that are taking place there. So you go to, I mean, far-flung villages, right, where we wouldn't have electricity years ago, but now you can see that there's electricity. But the problem is that, so there's been this huge distribution to people with less generation. So, I mean, what do you distribute when you're generating enough so that you can distribute to people? And my take is that it comes down to leadership, you know, or lack thereof. And starting with the governing party, which really they must take accountability. And I'm very, very disappointed that our president seemed to be. Yeah, I mean, I don't see the agency deceptions come to this matter. You know, I mean, electricity or energy is the most important thing. We've just heard from Business Unity South Africa a few weeks ago that the country is losing 4 billion rand per day as a result of this load shedding. So a government that cares, hearing something like that, not only economically, but the hospitals are crying foul that this load shedding is really affecting them there in terms of doing their job, assisting their or taking care of patients, schools, everyone's, you know. So the fact that the president has not fired the Minister of Energy and the Minister of Public Enterprise, I can't understand why we do that. But knowing our president, obviously we know him. We've been saying this again and again, even for other areas of other issues, that he's a person who's very, you know, it seems like he's a person who's very scared of firing someone. You know, he's a person who, and unfortunately, leadership is about taking unpopular decisions. The time when you're a leader, you must be courageous, you must be tough. And I'm not saying that go out there, fire people willy-nilly, but, you know, there should be some accountability. The fact that the Minister of Public Enterprise has been sitting there for the last 2 years with a half-capacitated or capacity board members, you know, on its own, and that minister should have been really been fired already. Because you are now blaming the board of directors, hearing that, you know, he must reconstitute or restructure the board. Yes, of course, yes, he must beef up the board. That's what we've been saying. For the last 2 years, that board has been half-capacitated, you know. Instead of about 14, 15 full board members, you've been having there six non-executive members, and then obviously with a chairperson and others, probably around about eight. So you can see that the people who are there have been arguing that the fact that they were appointed or recruited to come, it's because they are experts in their own fields. They may not be engineers, but ESCOM is a complex, it's a big organization. You know, it cannot be run by only engineers. Yes, engineers should be there, is important. But you need energy experts there in the board. You need environmentalist experts. You need commercial lawyer experts. You need a chartered accountant. But now the minister has not been replacing and beefing up the board for the last 2 years, and we don't have people with engineering and technical expertise in that board because of the of Minister Pravin Gordhan. So that's a person who must take accountability. Before we can go down to board, to executive, to management, whatever, leadership is about modeling. It's about example. You take example. You cannot go and fry the small fish and say, there go the. He must be the first one to fall on his sword.
Okay. Professor Swilling, you, from the vantage point and your experience, I mean, you've been involved in at a very high level in many different institutions, including the Development Bank of South Africa. Can we imagine a situation arising at the DBSA, for example, where the board is where you've got less than half the number of board people, of board members that you require, and that situation going on for a while?
No, I mean, that's a pretty extreme situation. I mean, at the moment, the DBSA has got less board members than it should have, and we have been in conversation with the Minister of Finance for a while to get additional board members appointed. But that's all in hand and is happening. But we've built up over time a very stable board culture. And that's absolutely essential. A lot of my research on state capture in 2017 revealed that many state-owned enterprises had a very problematic board cultures. Board cultures that were really manipulated by powerful politicians rather than boards that were, really had the best interests of their institution, at heart. So that's basically what, it's not an easy task to kind of build an integrated and shared collective board culture.
What about capacity, technical capacity at ESCOM? What's your reading of what's happening there? Because if one is looking at, you know, every time there's load shedding, you know, you told that the units are falling over. Sometimes they fall over like in threes, you know, and twos, you know, and simultaneously. And they seem to be battling to bring a lot of them back, you know, back to service on time, etc. Are we having a problem technically there, or is it just being badly managed, that the talent is there, the capacity is there, it's just being badly managed?
Well, I mean, ESCOM itself has made it clear that they have lost a lot of technical capacity over the years. So during the CEO leadership of Brian Malefe and Machila Koko, which was an autarkic regime ruled by fear, a lot of very competent professionals who could easily go find jobs elsewhere and in other countries left. And it would be incorrect to assume those were just white professionals. It was all many different kinds of professionals. So, you know, we've had a bleeding of technical capacity. That's been that's well known. There's no secret there. I think, you know, and so that there is a process which the Minister of Public Enterprise has been fostering to kind of draw back some of the experience, technical capacity. And when the president visited Tutuka, he was very alarmed by what he found. But he did refer to the young, power station managers across the fleet, that have brought in who do need help. So, you know, I mean, I think that's common cause. When it comes to management, I think Eskom management is actually doing quite a good job under the extremely, extremely, extremely difficult circumstances, which is a combination of corruption, a combination of old power stations, and a combination of sabotage, all on top of financial unviability caused by decisions that were made prior to the current management. So I think we are fortunate actually to have load shedding at current levels. It could be much worse.
Mm. Professor Majola seems to be of the view that by now something should have happened to the political head of Eskom.
I think the board definitely could be, it shouldn't have been allowed to deplete itself like it is. In South Africa we have this view that you when somebody is not performing, you lop off their head on the assumption that the next person is going to do a better job. That often, the evidence doesn't support that. Because it's not really individuals that really matter. Those individuals are part of a very problematic, complex system. And the political decision-making system in South Africa is kind of gridlocked. Some of the big key decisions, are not really being made. I think that all changed in July when the president made his announcement. That's a game-changing announcement that laid out a framework for moving forward, which was quite different to the minister responsible for energy policy. The minister was kind of brought in and supported it, but it was different to what he had been advocating up until then.
Mm. Yeah, just before we go over to Professor Majola again, Professor Suling, you mentioned state capture, you know, and yeah. I think generally we talk in very broad terms about state capture in state institutions, state capture at Eskom in particular. Just to give us, you know, as lay people an idea of how state capture would have impacted Eskom.
Well, Eskom was the number one prize for the state, the Zuma-centered power elite that coordinated the state capture project. That whole project there was a formal structure, and there was a shadow state coordinated by the Guptas and the Watson brothers and so on. And Eskom, looting Eskom was a priority. And this was done on a massive, massive scale. I mean, Tutuka is a relatively young power station. It should be operating at a energy availability factor, in other words, efficiency of at least 75%. It's below 30%. And not so long ago, when it came to auditing the spares available in Tutuka, all the spares were gone. 2 million, I think it was 2 million rands worth of spares just were not there. They'd just been stolen. So there are thousands of court cases. There's big court cases to get back money from the likes of Deloitte, from PwC, from McKinsey, and so on. And there are and Brian Molefe and Anoj Singh are in court. So you know, from the very top right through to the station managers, right through to staff, you had massive organized looting of Eskom to the point where it was nearly going to fall over completely. And luckily, state capture, or kind of formal state capture, came to an end, and there is some forces saying, well, let's try and clean it up, but we still have state capture. We still have those networks, those criminal networks, as well as political networks within Eskom that are sabotaging what the current management is trying to achieve.
Professor Majola, are we judging Eskom's performance too harshly, perhaps?
I think we do. I mean, as Professor Swilling is saying, that really men and women who are there, whether board, executive, and management, have tried their utmost best under these circumstances. You know, obviously, Eskom is a very complex organization, and unfortunately, everything revolves around the leadership. You know, when things are not going okay, it's because of leadership or lack thereof. When Andre de Rey took over that job, he knew exactly what was up to, you know. So, of course, yes, he has tried his utmost best to turn around, to put some measures around. And a very heavy political environment, because the problem with that environment is that one, you do certain things, and then the shareholder, which is the government, and then may have its own political agenda. So, but the fact that we are suffering as we are as a country in terms of load shedding, surely something should have happened there in terms of knowing what are the causes, how we can prevent it, what, you know, it seems like everyone is just as despair as all of us. It's like people have lost all ideas. They don't know what to do, what to happen. And there are no innovation. I don't know. It's because we are outside. You know, it's easy for us to say all these things because we are outside. Maybe people who are intern or inside, they know what they are going through, what is happening there. Leadership, it's a very unfortunate thing, because it's easy to throw stones and say all sorts of things and find that you really don't appreciate or understand the intricacies and the challenges that people are going through. However, because we are a leader, unfortunately, that's a cost and the price of leadership. That because at the time or current, you are the one who's in charge, and then we are looking up to you. You must come up with solutions and actions. If you are unable to do that, probably move away and let someone else try, and then maybe you may do better than you.
Professor Swelling, in the middle of a crisis such as we have, is it a good idea to have two ministers being in charge of energy or overseeing energy affairs? You know, one looking after the energy provider and another dealing with policy and you know, and related other stuff.
It's an absolutely terrible idea. It's a disaster. If I was the president, I would create, under the circumstances, a minister for energy who would be responsible for energy policy and the energy system, which, and Eskom is just a part of it, because the problem we face is no longer Eskom. We don't have an Eskom problem. We have a power sector problem, and you need a minister who can put his or her hand, arms around the whole thing and guide it in the direction that was set in July by the president. But we have two ministers who don't always see eye to eye. And that is very, very, very problematic. That's the first thing that I would change if I was the president.
And if we're looking for solutions, my sense is that all of us are standing back and looking at the ministers responsible, or the minister responsible in particular, Pravin Gordhan, and we're looking at Andre Jureja. And but otherwise, we don't seem to think there is any contribution that we can make. Can government resolve this crisis on its own, Professor Swelling, you think?
No, definitely not, because a big part of the crisis is a financial crisis, and the state doesn't have the financial resources to resolve it on its own terms, which is why there is a presidential climate finance task team led by Daniel Manele, former deputy governor of the Reserve Bank, to engage the international donors around the $8.5 billion that was committed at COP26, but also there are processes underway around the restructuring of Eskom into three different entities that is going to require South African financial institutions, both public and private, to come together to work out how to completely refinance the energy sector. New generation is already underway. That's renewables on a massive scale. We're into the transition. But there's green hydrogen. There's the transmission system. All of that is going to have to come from private sector investors. And we need to recognize we have the funding within the South African context. We don't have to borrow money from overseas and pay them back. We can borrow money from ourselves.
Mm. And your prognosis, Professor Swelling, are we looking into another 24 months of pain, or are we looking into...
No, I think things are probably going to get worse over the next 2 years. Load shedding is going to get worse, so we must all prepare for that, get our backup systems and our solar panels and so on. From the third year onwards, if all the current procurement of renewables takes place smoothly, which I don't see why it shouldn't, from the third year, things will start to improve, and maybe in the fourth year, we will get load shedding. That's my prediction. But a lot of pieces need to fall into place, in particular around the financing of these solutions. We really need to enable that, and that would include, for example, an announcement by the Minister of Finance in his medium-term budget speech in October, late October, that the state is going to take over half the debt of Eskom. If that doesn't happen, it's going to become extremely difficult to put money into the energy system to achieve the reforms that have been announced. Mm.
Professor Majola, as we're just about running out of time, the last word will go to you. What would you say is the elementary lesson of leadership and management that's coming out of Eskom?
Well, it's complexity management, understanding leadership that enterprises like Eskom are very complex. So you need leaders who will understand systems thinking, complexity, how to handle a situation like that. And you need decisiveness, you need action. And I always say that leadership without action is dead. So, and also, I mean, what Professor Swelling is saying is very, very important. Communication. I know that Eskom always have these updates, you know, and mostly with journalists, analysts, with educated people. But you've got to beef up the communication department there. Just communicate with ordinary people. What exactly the problem? Why are we having this load shedding? What needs to be done? Because what Prof. Swelling is saying is very important, that we must prepare ourselves, that if really for the next 2 years it's going to be that. So people must know, and then take the people into their confidence and trust. Not coming with all these big words, technical words, people don't even know what does it mean. So I will really say that Eskom has really beef up its communication department.
Well, that's where we're going to be wrapping it up on the Politics Weekly for this week. And I would like to thank our guests, Professor Mark Swelling, who's the chair of the Development Bank of South Africa and also teaches at the Center for Sustainability Innovations at the University of Stellenbosch, as well as Professor Mazwe Majola, who's the CEO of the Worldwide Institute of Leadership. We appreciate your time, the both of you. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.